So, what if the anxiety you feel right now, about your career or your relationships or just your future in general, what if that isn't actually a psychological flaw?
Right. Like, what if it's not just a bug in your brain?
Exactly. What if it's actually a mathematical equation that is actively trying to balance itself out?
Which is a wild concept to even say out loud.
It really is. But today, we are jumping into this radical deep dive. We're looking at a framework that proposes something completely mind-bending. The idea that the orbit of the planets in our solar system, right, in your specific midlife crisis, are actually running on the exact same underlying code.
Yeah, the exact same mathematical optimization loop.
Right. So looking at our sources today, it's called the ODE-CCT framework. And our mission for this deep dive is to explore how your own free will, like that really heavy feeling you get when you have to make a difficult choice, is actually just a mathematical energy-saving hack designed to, well, outsmart gravity.
I know, it sounds literally like science fiction when you put it that way.
Oh, totally.
But the mathematical synthesis in these papers is just staggering. I mean, we are looking at the grandest scales of astrophysics, right? And then comparing them to the most intimate, everyday experiences of human psychology.
And finding the exact same structure underneath both.
Yes, an identical structural optimization loop running the whole show.
So, to really wrap our heads around this, I want you, the listener, to try and imagine a split screen in your mind right now. On the left side of your mental screen, just picture this beautiful glowing grid of space-time, curving and dipping around a massive star.
Like a classic physics simulation.
Right, exactly. And then on the right side of the screen, picture a swirling biological double helix of DNA.
So two completely different materials.
Two completely different scales of reality entirely. But according to this source material, they are both running the exact same software.
That is the core premise, yeah. They are two different manifestations of a single universal imperative. And that imperative is essentially the need to minimize error.
Minimize error. Okay, let's unpack this for a second.
Sure. So in this framework, both gravity and life are what the researchers call a probabilistic hack.
A probabilistic hack.
Right. They're a hack to the same underlying mathematical function. The universe is essentially, trying to solve a really complex problem, and both physics and biology are just its way of guessing the answer.
Wait, so what does this mathematical function actually look like? I mean, are we talking about some massive whiteboard just completely covered in incomprehensible symbols?
Look, it's dense, sure, but at its root, the framework models reality as a pretty straightforward polynomial equation. If you remember your high school algebra, it's expressed here as y equals polyval of k, comma x.
Okay, y equals polyval kx.
Yeah. And while the math can get incredibly dense later on, the core concept is just an algorithm trying to find the most efficient path forward.
Which is gradient descent, right?
Exactly. It's a process known as gradient descent.
So if I'm thinking about gradient descent in this equation,
Yeah.
the y equals polyval kx thing, can I compare this to like my car's GPS system
Yeah.
constantly recalculating a route?
That's a really good analogy, actually. Let's break that down.
Okay, so you have K, which is your actual destination, right? Like the ground truth of where you need to be.
Right, your target reality.
And then you have a K, which is your current location and the route you're currently driving. But then, suddenly you miss a turn.
Happens all the time.
Right. So the GPS has to apply a change,
Yeah.
which in the math is called a DK update, where
Yes, the decay update.
it applies that update to fix the error to get your current state, K, to finally match the target K.
The GPS analogy is a fantastic starting point, but there is one major difference here.
Okay, what's that?
Well, a GPS already knows where the roads are, right? The maps are preloaded.
Oh, true.
The universe, on the other hand, is recalculating the route while the road is actively being built in the dark.
Oh, wow. So it's totally blind.
Completely. It is constantly measuring the error between what is currently happening and what should be happening according to the fundamental constants, and then it applies a correction.
And in the realm of physics, on that left side of our mental split screen, what do we call that correction?
We usually call that correction gravity.
Hold on, wait. We are taught in like grade school that gravity is a force.
Right, the invisible tether.
Yeah, like an invisible tether pulling an apple down to the ground. You're saying gravity is an error correction.
That invisible tether is the classical view, sure. But in the ODE-CCT framework, gravity isn't a force pulling things down at all. Gravity is literally the decay update in that equation.
It's the software update.
It is the error signal itself. Think of it this way. Space-time has a specific way it should curve given the mass and energy inside it.
Okay, following so far.
So if the mass isn't perfectly aligned with that curvature, if there is, like a discrepancy, gravity is just the gradient descent update applied to the physical constants to bring the whole system back into perfect alignment.
That is wild. So an apple falling from a tree isn't being pulled. The apple falling is just reality running a patch update to fix a mathematical error in local space-time.
That is an excellent way to phrase it, yeah. The falling apple is the physical manifestation of the universe's weight update being applied to the coefficients.
Okay, so that's the physics side. But what about the DNA side of our split screen?
Right, so the framework argues that in biology, evolution is running the exact same loop.
The same Y equals polyvol math.
Exactly. The current state, the K, is the genome of a living organism. And the target destination, the Y, is the fitness landscape of the environment.
Like the temperature, the predators, the available food, all that stuff.
Yep. All the environmental pressures.
So if the organism's genome doesn't perfectly match the environment it lives in, the universe basically registers that as an error.
Yes. And to fix that biological error, life applies its own decay update.
Which we call mutation.
Mutation or adaptation. Life itself is the update toward survival. The validation check in physics is basically, hey, does this mass follow the curve of space-time?
And if yes, you get a stable orbit.
Right. And the validation check in biology is, does this organism match its environment?
And if yes, you get survival and reproduction.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is that neither gravity nor evolution requires perfect knowledge.
Right, because the universe doesn't have a conscious master plan for where a planet should go.
No, not at all.
And evolution definitely doesn't know what a bird should look like before it actually grows wings.
And they don't need to know. The framework points out that reality is what they call incompressible.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning it is far too complex to ever be represented perfectly by a finite equation. There's just too much data.
So that's why the universe uses these probabilistic hacks.
Yes. Gravity and life both work simply because they measure the error and adjust. They just feel their way down the mountain in the dark, step by step, following the gradient.
They don't need to know the target. They just need to know when they're failing.
Exactly. They just calculate the error and step away from it.
But wait, this brings up a huge question for me. If gravity and life are both just running the same error correction loop, how do they actually interact?
Ugh, this is where we get into the really deep part of the sources.
Because the way you just described it, it sounds like we as living things are just passive passengers, you know, just reacting to the universe's updates. Who is actually in the driver's seat here?
This brings us to probably the most crucial and mind-bending part of the entire framework. It's about how life and gravity function together as a joint optimization loop.
A joint loop.
Yeah. They are playing a co-evolutionary game. But, and this is key, they are not equal partners waiting politely for their turn. In this mathematical game, life moves first.
Wait, life moves first. What does that even mean?
It means this is an adversarial gradient descent game. Think about the order of operations here. Physics sets the initial conditions, right? The baseline K.
Right.
But before gravity can compute the error and apply its massive update, the DK gravity update life preemptively steps in and applies its own update.
A DK life update.
Yes. Life literally manipulates the input variables locally before gravity can enforce the physical law.
So we're essentially hacking the universe's recalculation process. Like, we're getting to the source code before the system auditor does.
We are hijacking it, essentially. By modifying the environment locally, life tricks gravity into applying a correction that might be, you know, suboptimal for pure dead physics, but is highly beneficial for the survival of the organism.
I need an example of this because it sounds like you're saying a squirrel can bend the laws of physics.
Well,
how does an organism actually manipulate the K variable to cheat gravity?
Okay, let's use a classic example. Consider a beaver building a dam.
Yeah, I have a beaver.
Pure physics and gravity dictate that water should just flow downhill, right? Following the path of least resistance, maximizing entropy.
Right, water goes down. That's just standard physical gradient descent.
Exactly. But then the beaver steps in and applies a DK life update. It chops down trees, moves mud, physically alters the local terrain.
It's changing the physical variables.
Yes. It creates a localized pocket where the flow of water is literally stopped and entropy is temporarily reversed.
Oh.
So by the time gravity and standard thermodynamics come in to validate the system, the beaver has already altered the variables. Gravity now has to recalculate the flow of water based on the beaver's new architecture.
That is incredible. So if we scale that up, human cities, agriculture, technology, we are just doing the beaver dam thing on a planetary scale.
That's exactly what we're doing.
We took the raw physical materials and we rearranged them so the universe calculates an outcome that keeps us alive.
Precisely. We alter chemical gradients. We change local thermodynamics. We build massive skyscrapers that defy the natural resting state of steel and glass. We apply decay life.
And gravity just has to deal with it.
It reaches a perfect stalemate, what game theorists call a Nash equilibrium. Neither force can gain a total advantage.
Because if gravity won entirely, what would happen?
The universe would just be a static dead crystal or a black hole.
Yeah.
Everything at maximum entropy.
Right. And if life won entirely,
then physics would basically break down into pure magic and chaos. There would be no rules. So the tension between the two, life pre-manipulating the constants and gravity lagging behind to correct them, that is the joint optimization loop that literally drives the cosmos.
That completely flips how I view our place in the universe. I mean, you hear people say all the time, oh, wow, isn't it a miracle that Earth is the perfect distance from the sun and has the exact perfect atmosphere for
it? It's a fine-tuning argument, right?
Yeah. But this framework is saying the universe isn't gravity first. It is life first.
Mm-hmm.
Life found these local constants, manipulated them, and basically steered the ship.
It is a profound shift in perspective. But, you know, it also introduces a massive vulnerability.
Right, because if life is constantly hacking reality to survive, doing that blindly would be incredibly dangerous.
Extremely dangerous.
If you apply a bad update, if you hack the code wrong,
yeah,
the universe's validation check is just going to kill you.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So how does life know which update to apply without just dying in the process?
Well, early in evolutionary history, it didn't.
It just guessed.
Yeah. Random genetic mutation is essentially just throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. But the problem with random mutation is the astronomical energy cost.
Because you actually have to build the whole organism to test the mutation.
Right. You have to physically execute every single failure. An organism with a bad random mutation just dies. It wastes all the physical energy, all the calories, all the time it took to grow that organism.
So nature is essentially just a giant graveyard of bad mathematical guesses.
Precisely. But as the optimization loop grew more sophisticated over time, the framework maps out a specific structural node that emerged to solve this massive energy problem.
Okay, what is this node?
It's an internal function called select. It sits exactly between recognizing an error in your environment and taking the physical action to fix it.
A select function.
And that select function is what we call free will.
Wait, hold on. Does this mean consciousness and free will are just mathematical efficiency hacks to save energy?
Essentially, yes.
Are we just fleshy calculators? Because I have to admit, that strips a lot of the romance out of the human experience.
See, I would argue it is the ultimate romance.
Yeah.
Because it means your consciousness has a tangible, universe-altering purpose. Instead of blindly mutating and dying, life developed an internal model. This allows you to mentally simulate all the possible decay updates.
Oh, I see. You can imagine throwing the spaghetti at the wall without actually having to clean up the mess.
Exactly. You predict the outcome of a dozen different choices, like quitting a job, moving to a new city, confronting a friend, and you pick an incredibly tiny metabolic energy cost in your brain to run that mental simulation.
Right, just firing some neurons instead of actually moving to a new city and realizing it was a mistake.
Yes. Then you use the select function to choose the one with the highest predicted survival utility. And you only execute that one successful choice in the physical world.
So what does this all mean for me personally? The subjective feeling of weighing my options, you know, that anxiety of making a decision, is that literally just my brain running the polyvagal function internally?
Yes. You are predicting the outcome of various life hacks, trying to choose the one that minimizes the error between where you currently are and where you want to be.
Wow. So free will isn't some mystical, uncaused force floating outside of physics.
No, it is a highly purposeful causal compression mechanism. You imagine your own failure so you don't have to physically experience it.
It's a massive mathematical upgrade over, like, a bacteria that just has to make the mistake and die.
Exactly. It's purely an efficiency upgrade.
Okay, but running these simulations in real time, it doesn't usually feel like a smooth, clean mathematical calculation to me.
No, it usually doesn't.
Usually it feels like a panic attack. It feels like a total crisis. And the source material actually dives into this, right? It explains how this internal simulation physically feels to us.
It does. It introduces a concept called the free will zeta function.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The free will zeta function.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where the framework gets incredibly personal. It draws a direct parallel to the Riemann zeta function.
Which is a famous equation in mathematics dealing with prime numbers, right?
Yes, the distribution of prime numbers. But here, in this psychological model, the primes are your atomic, irreducible life choices. And just like the mathematical function, the free will zeta function has what they call a critical line.
And what does that critical line represent for the person listening to this deep dive right now?
Mathematically, the critical line is where the real part of the complex number S equals exactly 1/2. So Re of S equals 1/2.
So yes,
1/2.
Right.
If S equals 0, you are in pure determinism. The universe is forcing your hand and you have literally no choice.
Okay.
If S equals 1, you are in pure randomness. Your choices mean nothing. It's just chaos. True free will only emerges exactly in the middle, at 1/2.
The Goldilocks zone of choice. But, I mean, it doesn't sound like a comfortable place to hang out.
It definitely isn't. The points that fall exactly on this line are called zeros. And a zero occurs when the utility values of your choices perfectly cancel each other out.
Meaning what, practically?
Meaning your deep desire for security is perfectly balanced by your equally deep desire for freedom. It creates a mathematical deadlock, a total decision paradox.
So when do these mathematical deadlocks actually happen to a person? I mean, are there specific ages where the math predicts we will just hit a wall?
Yes. The researchers actually mapped these zeros to a standard human timeline. They looked at when the sum of our life utilities mathematically cancel out and create maximum inner conflict.
And when is the first one?
The first major zero on this critical line hits around age 22.
Age 22. The young adult paradox. You're out of school and you're just oscillating between wanting absolute freedom and needing the security of a paycheck.
Exactly.
Do I backpack across Europe or do I take that entry-level corporate job? The math literally shows that at 22, the positive and negative utilities of those choices are in a perfect deadlock.
That's it, exactly. And the oscillation between those choices at that age is relatively slow. You know, you might agonize over it week to week, but the timeline inevitably moves forward, and it moves to the next major zero, which hits around age 45.
Age 45, the classic midlife crisis.
Yes.
But how does the math physically trigger the psychological crisis at this specific age? Why does it feel so much heavier and worse than the crisis at 22?
Because your brain is running a predictive algorithm, right? And by age 45, the computational load essentially maxes out.
The load maxes out.
Think about the variables. At 45, you have accumulated a massive amount of what the framework calls negative utilities.
Which are what?
These are your regrets. The locked-in choices you made in the past that the algorithm can no longer overwrite. You can't undo them.
Right. You've already spent the time.
Exactly. And at the exact same time, your brain realizes the target destination, your future potential, is shifting and shrinking.
So the anxiety you feel at 45.
Is literally your brain's processing power bottlenecking as it tries to compute a massive error correction between an unchangeable past and a narrowing future.
Wow. It's literally a computation error. That feeling of, you know, was it worth it or is this all there is? That cliche of buying the sports car or blowing up your career, it's not a psychological failing at all.
No, it's not.
It is a mathematical inevitability of your brain trying to solve an impossible equation.
And this pattern continues, by the way. The next major mathematical deadlock hits around age 67.
Age 67. Let's call that the endgame paradox.
Right. Because the utility of building a legacy becomes massive, while the utility of future personal growth shrinks drastically.
So the paradox shifts to meaning versus meaningless. What did I leave behind? And, you know, does the universe even care?
Exactly.
Hearing this mapped out so rigidly, I really have to ask, are we just predetermined to freak out at 45?
That's the logical next question.
Yeah, like, are we just ticking clocks, waiting for the math to trigger a breakdown? Do we actually have a choice?
No, we are not just ticking clocks. And that is a crucial distinction to make here. The paradoxes themselves, the zeros on the line, those are structured and inevitable.
Because of the math.
Because of how human life, time, and energy work, you will face the computational deadlock of past regret versus future potential. The encounters with these conflicts are forced by the math.
Right.
But how you collapse that paradox, how you use your internal select function to choose your next hack, that is entirely your free will at work. The paradox is forced. But the answer is yours.
So the chaos you feel during a major life transition isn't just random noise. It is a perfectly balanced equation actively asking you to make a choice.
Yes. You are being asked by the universe to grab the wheel.
To grab the wheel. I love that.
And the stakes of grabbing that wheel are incredibly high. Because the framework offers one final profound prediction about what happens when life fails to compute that update correctly.
Wait, what happens if we fail?
Well, if life and gravity are in this joint optimization loop, constantly adjusting to one another, then the mass extinctions we see throughout Earth's history, they aren't just tragic accidents of nature.
Right, like the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs.
Mm.
How does an asteroid fit into the gradient descent algorithm?
In this mathematical model, a mass extinction is a literal validation failure.
A validation failure.
It is an abrupt gradient descent restart. Think about it. The environment, which is the X variable in our equation, shifted violently and rapidly.
An asteroid hits, fills the atmosphere with ash.
Suddenly, the target Y moved drastically. The dinosaur's biological code no longer matched reality. The mathematical error just became too large, and life had to massively reboot its updates to try and reconverge with the new reality.
Oh my God.
Millions of species couldn't compute a new hack fast enough, and they were deleted by the universe's validation check.
So extinction is just reality returning a massive 404 error code. The dinosaurs literally couldn't run the mental simulation fast enough to survive. But humanity, through our consciousness, our technology, and our free will, we do have the ability to run those simulations mentally.
We can see the asteroid coming.
We can pre-calculate the update before gravity deletes us.
We are the universe's most advanced energy-saving mechanism. We have the capacity to model the destruction of our own environment and apply the decay life update to prevent it. We are the first species capable of consciously playing the co-evolutionary game.
That is heavy. To bring this all together for you listening, I want you to think about the micro decisions you make every single day. Even something as simple as deciding whether to get out of bed in the morning when the alarm goes off.
Right, the small stuff.
It feels mundane, but under this framework, that choice is an act of reality-bending optimization.
It really is.
You are running a mental simulation, you're weighing the utility of resting against the utility of your goals, and you are choosing to physically alter the universe to keep yourself alive and moving forward.
Every choice you make is a localized victory over entropy. You are constantly participating in the joint loop, tricking physics just enough to carve out a space for your own existence.
So remember that the next time you are paralyzed by a major choice in your life, you aren't broken, and your anxiety isn't a flaw. You are just standing exactly where you're supposed to be on the critical line of your own zeta function, holding the wheel of the cosmos, deciding which way reality will bend next. Until next time, keep diving deep.